Today on The Grave Talks, Ghost Light, Spirits of the King Opera House, a conversation with filmmaker Gavin Webb. The King Opera House in Van Buren, Arkansas, isn't just a beautiful relic of the past. It's a living, breathing theater with a haunted history unlike any other. Today, Gavin Webb joins us to talk about his paranormal documentary that dives deep into the legends and lore of this 133-year-old opera house. From ghostly apparitions in 1920s clothing to a lady in white wandering the men's restroom, the spirits said to haunt this historic space are as numerous as they are mysterious. Perhaps the most tragic spirit of all is an actor reportedly killed by a furious father who has suspected him of bad intentions with his daughter. Gavin shares behind-the-scenes stories, eerie encounters, and what they uncovered while investigating one of Arkansas's most haunted buildings. Is the King Opera House truly haunted? Or does it just know how to put on one hell of a show? Today on The Grave Talks, The King Opera House, a paranormal documentary, a conversation with filmmaker Gavin Webb. Well, Gavin, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk about your documentary. It's King Opera House, a paranormal documentary. That had to have felt so good to get that out into the world. Congratulations.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me on. It's an honor to be on the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So what got you interested in even doing a documentary before we dive into the paranormal aspect?
So originally, I wanted to make a fiction film. I wanted to make a horror movie. It was a lost tape film. And when I was pitching the script to these like studios that I live nearby, they didn't read it. They didn't want it. A lot of them just was up front and said, you know, you have no resume. We're not reading this. And I said, okay. And that's when I've always had an idea that I wanted to make a paranormal documentary just after I did the other stuff, the other film stuff. But I kind of realized that maybe I should go independent and make the documentary first, so I have something under my belt to show studios. And that's kind of what got me in, got me into wanting to make the documentaries, is because I wanted to show stuff, but then I enjoyed it so much that I just stayed independent making the documentaries. So that's kind of what got me into it. So thankfully, no one wanted the first script that I made that was a horror movie, and now I get to make paranormal documentaries, which is 10 times better.
Yeah, because look what happens. A no turned into an opportunity for you.
Exactly.
What got you even interested in film? Is that something you've kind of dabbled with?
I just always remember wanting to do film. It was like something I was born with. I remember like when I was like five, I was like, yeah, I really want to do film, because that's when I kind of realized like, oh, that's like a job you can have. Like, people make these films for a living. And I guess ever since then, I've always wanted to do it. I think it's because of, I would watch old movies like with my dad, because he'd always have like a movie going. And I guess that kind of got me interested in it.
That's so interesting to me that you were so young and wanted to do that. Like, I don't think I figured out a direction in my life till I was like 30.
Yeah, I'm surprised every time I tell people that, they're like, you've always like wanted to do it since you were like five. And I was like, yeah, it's just something that I've always been interested in, I guess.
Now, were you also interested in the paranormal when you were young, or did you have some experiences that kind of piqued your curiosity?
Yeah, I definitely. So we built the house that I live in, or at least we knew the people that built it. So I knew it wasn't haunted, but one of the first movies my dad showed me was Ghostbusters. And this was like when I was like three. And that introduced me to, you know, movies, but also introduced me to the paranormal, even though it's like a fictional part of the paranormal. But in 2007, Ghost Adventures started airing on TV, and my family would always sit down and watch it. Like, we would watch it as a family. Like, every Saturday, a new episode would drop, every Sunday. And I remember we'd sit down and watch it, and just ever since then, it kind of like piqued my interest in the paranormal, and that kept me going. And then in high school, we did a lot of paranormal investigation stuff with my friend group, but they weren't as interested as I was.
So did you do paranormal investigation then?
Like in high school?
Yeah, like prior to this documentary about King's Opera House.
Yeah, when I was a freshman in high school, we would go out to like these like cemeteries at night with like a single EMF and like something on our phone to like try to communicate with the spirits in the cemetery. And then my junior year of high school, we started doing more of it because we could start driving. And we lived by this like abandoned haunted house that like a cult member used to run. So that was like the talk of the town. And we would go in there with permission. We'd go in there and do like investigations, but you know, we were scared at the time. I wouldn't be scared now, but back then I was definitely really scared.
I still get scared.
Yeah, it's like when it's a pitch black room and all you have is a night vision camera, it's terrifying.
There was times when I was watching the documentary that I was like, I would not be brave enough to do what they're doing right now. So just know that.
Yeah, there's a part in the documentary. I remember my friend Lily, her parents were watching it, and they said there was a part where we're in the like dressing room area and the music box started going off.
Yes.
And she said that her parents would be like, yeah, I'm out of there. Like they like would have left.
And it was something just creepy about the sound of it too. Those music boxes, that kind of creeps me out a little bit. And then the unexpectedness of it just turning on, that gets me.
Yeah. And it's like the music is like, it's like an old music box, and it's very eerie, but it's a very interesting piece. I really like it.
How did you come to King's Opera House? How did you decide to do a documentary about that location?
Well, when we were thinking of me, when I was thinking of the paranormal documentary idea, we had to find a location. And I emailed a bunch of locations, and a lot of people back then, at least, didn't want the publicity of being haunted.
Mm-hmm.
But then I remember I live near the King Opera. I live 10, 15 minutes away from the King Opera. And I remember it being like sort of a talk when we were in high school that there's a weird vibe in there. And then when I started doing research, I saw an article saying the King Opera House is haunted. I sent Mr. Ratcliffe, the manager of the King Opera, an email, and he said, yeah, we can do it. It's good to go. And I guess it's kind of what it just snowballed after that. I like sunk my teeth into it. I really loved the building after, and that's kind of why I picked the King Opera.
And it's been in Van Buren, Arkansas for a long time because I was looking at its history. And the original building was constructed in 1891.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
It was the King Opera, and then Bob Burns bought it, the radio host. He bought it like late 1900s, not late, like mid-late 1900s. And then the city like bought it back, the county bought it back, and then turned it into the King Opera House again.
And it has a very interesting story explaining the hauntings that I thought was rather fascinating. So I did a deep dive on that, but I can't even say it's rumors. It did happen. There was a man who was killed. Now, I think there's some different stories on what actually happened leading up to the killing.
Yeah, it's all like word of mouth. We don't exactly know the main story, but the most popular one is there's an actor named Tolson who wanted to run away with a doctor's daughter, and Dr. Parchman figured out that was his name, and he shot Tolson at the train station that's up the road from the King Opera. And Tolson was there to perform. He was part of Broadway. He traveled, and the King Opera was a stop, and that's where Dr. Parchman killed him. Was the not the King Opera, but close to the King Opera.
Yeah, because he was going, they were leaving.
Yeah, the run was just over. About to leave.
A couple stories I read It sounds like he might not have even been connected to the doctor's daughter at all. Like, I think the doctor had it in his head that she might run off with him, but he was married to another woman.
It's kind of all over the place. Like, there's reports that, like, Tolson never was going to run away with the daughter. It was a rumor. There was the rumor that Tolson had a different wife. It was just a whole bunch of, you know, word of mouth. Like, we don't specifically know what happened, but Dr. Parshman went to court for it, and he was proven innocent because he was friends with the judge, so he got off scot-free.
He literally got away with murder.
Yeah.
And I think it, you know, it was a different time back then, and it's like, yes, but, you know, it was the honor of his daughter. What was he supposed to do?
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see why Tolson's spirit would be there and very, like, active and mad, because, you know, if I got killed and, you know, my killer didn't get a day of punishment, I would also be very upset.
I agree with that. I always think that you can't rest in peace if you die in such a tragic way and there was no justice in your death.
Yeah, like, he was killed and his killer got off scot-free. And I can definitely see his point of view and why he's still active.
And I did read somewhere where the daughter ended up moving away. And so really, if he is, you know, he killed this poor man because of the honor of his daughter. He didn't want his daughter running away. His daughter ended up leaving.
Yeah, it was gonna happen. Like, she was gonna leave. He didn't want it to be Tolson, I guess. And Tolson's buried in a cemetery in Fort Smith, which is 10 minutes away from the King Opera.
So once you decide to do the documentary there about the King Opera, did you have to dive in quite a bit to the history then and see if other... Did you talk to other people first? Is this place really haunted?
Yeah, in the documentary, we went to a local historian, Mr. Tom Wing. He's a great guy, and he knows a lot about the King Opera because he used to teach college classes there. Of course, he knows the town and the history of it due to the fact that he is a local historian. We talked to him about it, and he didn't really understand why Tolson would haunt there because he wasn't killed there. And that kind of sparked a question on if the place is even haunted in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And in the documentary, we talk about that. We talk about, you know, could this just all be a hoax? Could this not really be haunted? You know, could this just be people saying they have paranormal experiences just to have one? So I talked to a guy named Alec, who does paranormal investigations on YouTube. At least he did before he went off to college. And he said him and his crew had a lot of experiences there, like even like the fire department showed up because like the fire alarm started going off. They had their own stories. It was very interesting, but I wanted to get his point of view before we went in to get our own experience.
And especially since you're going to be filming it as a documentary, it's kind of hard to go back and continue filming. You know, you're trying to capture things in one night. So it's kind of a good idea to know what's happened to somebody else there.
Yeah, like what are we in for? That's kind of why we interviewed Alec.
So you got your friend Diego to join you. And it was the two of you. Had he ever done any other investigations, or was he like, hey, Gavin sounds like fun?
We were friends in high school. He would come with me to do the investigations. We would always film it. Like, we would do it for YouTube. Those YouTube videos aren't up anymore, but he would come with, and he had somewhat of an interest in the paranormal, but not as much as I did.
So at the end of the night, he might have been a little surprised.
There was definitely a point where he was, like, very scared.
He was, and very emotional.
Yeah, that's what really, like, sealed the deal for me, is this guy that I've known for years just broken into shambles, about to cry because he saw something and was scared. I was like, yeah, this is like there's something here.
So you took a unique approach to your investigation, which I really appreciated. And you did bring some trigger objects with you, but you actually brought like a trigger stage show, if you will. You had a great idea to bring some actors in and have them do a run through of, I can't remember what show you were doing, Crucible.
The Crucible.
Yeah. And so you brought in three actors and you put them on stage. And I thought that was a really good idea.
Thank you. Yeah. I picked The Crucible because it was, it's an old story. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe some spirits knew it. It's also a dark story, which I thought would also bring the activity up, which it did. And yeah, thank you for saying it's a unique idea. I don't know where I got the idea. It just came up one day. I think I was talking to my friend Keegan and his wife, Emily. And Emily was a part of Arkansas Tech University's theater program. And she said that the theater was haunted and they would always have stuff happen when they were doing shows or rehearsal. They would hear stuff. They would see stuff. And I guess it kind of snowballed from there. I was like, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do a little performance to see if we can get the activity going. Surprisingly, it did work out very well. It was like you said, a trigger object, but more like a trigger show.
Uh-huh.
So I emailed the nearest college, which was UFIS, University of Arkansas, Fort Smith. I asked if some of their theater kids would like to be part of the project. And of course, they were hands-on. And yeah, it went from there and they did an amazing job.
They really did, because I kind of thought they would be up there just reading the script, kind of like your first read-through. But they weren't. They were full out in it 100% to the point that even when you were done with that part of the investigation, they stuck around for a while.
Yeah, they stuck around for like another hour or two during the investigation. I was very happy they did, because they also had experiences, because a few of them didn't even believe in the paranormal. But after they left, they definitely believe now.
Because you brought some things with you, like you had a music box, you had REM pods, some different basic paranormal investigative tools.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting as I'm watching it, because I kind of assumed going into it, there's not going to be a ton of activity. You got way more activity than I thought you would.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before we started the interview, we were all kind of surprised by the end of the night.
When you talk about the activity, did you feel like you were kind of connecting or knew who you might be connecting with? Or did you have any theories on that?
I guess we were kind of hoping it would be like Tolson that we would connect with. But, towards the end of the night, we realized there is a lot of spirits in here. There's a lot more people in here than just Tolson. We didn't exactly know who we were communicating with, but there was a handful of people there. A lot of spirits there.
There was an interesting, I think you might have been doing an Estes method.
Yes, with the Estes method.
With the girl who had come in, the actress, which I thought quite brave of her.
Yeah.
to jump into an investigation and be the one.
Yeah, I got to give her props for doing that.
But Emily came across during that.
Yes. So there's a story that when people go to that restroom, they see a lady in white and they don't know who it is. They don't know, why she's there. And they always she's always asking for her husband, and she just disappears. Like, we don't know why. So when we did the Estes method, we got Emily, and, we kind of were like, okay, maybe that's her name. But then when we go back to the Tom Wing interview, which was, I filmed it at his office at the Drennan Scott House, which is also in Van Buren, just down the road from the King Opera. There was a exhibit dedicated to a girl named Emily Drennan, who had this like white looking dress on display. And it was cool to like put the connections there, because Emily actually performed at the King Opera when she was alive. So maybe that was her there.
I thought that was really interesting, because since the actress was the one who said Emily, you didn't have anything to do with that, and that had already happened, and I'm going to guess you weren't really thinking the two were connected in any way.
No,
Prior to that?
To be honest, I didn't really do a lot of history research on the Drennan Scott House because, you know, the investigation was about the King Opera. But when I looked up the Drennan Scott House, the husband of Emily, I was going through it and it said Emily Drennan was part of the Drennan Scott House and performed at the King Opera. And I thought that was a very interesting point of view.
Do you know what happened to her husband and why she might be looking for him?
It could be like maybe she was watching a show and she just lost her husband. You know, some people do that. They just run wild in a theater and you don't know where, you know, where the person went. So maybe that's
true.
What happened.
It's like, where's my husband? It's time to go.
Yeah, it's like the show's over. Where's my husband at? Or where's my wife at? So
when you were doing the investigation, what actually really did you find compelling?
I think it was very compelling that there was multiple spirits in the King Opera. Like, I wasn't expecting it, and I thought it was very compelling because, you know, we just thought it was Tolson. We didn't think there was tens or 20 spirits in here. But then you kind of realize that when people pass away, they want to go to, you know, their happy place. And maybe the theater was a lot of people's happy place. So I thought that was very compelling. Also thought it was very cool when we caught like this figure in the doorway that we had to like edit the coloring just to see him. I thought that was really cool as well.
And that's kind of where Diego got a little freaked out.
That's when Diego like went from I kind of believe to I believe in spirits.
Just because of that one experience. I always say that the people who are skeptics, it's because they've never had an experience.
Yeah.
And once something has happened that you can't explain logically, that can lead you to actually believing there's something else out there.
Yeah, like I said, we were friends for years before this, and I remember he was off. He has a job, and he went to work the next day with, like, little to no sleep because the King Opera was so terrifying to him. Every time he closed his eyes, he felt the vibe of someone watching him. And I remember getting a text from him a few days later, and he's like, dude, I haven't slept since the King Opera. I'm, like, terrified. Even his parents, like went to my dad and was like, hey, listen, like Diego's like really like shooken up about what happened. And at the end of the day, they liked the documentary. It's just, you know, he didn't step foot in downtown Van Buren for months because of it.
Well, and there is something that you guys did say repeatedly that you felt like you were being watched.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird vibe in there because, you know, no one's there, but you feel like a million eyes just looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
It was very anxiety, like filled your body because you're like, someone's watching me, but I can't see him.
And that's a feeling that's hard to shake, even when you walk out of there. So I see why that feeling would, especially having experiences in the theater, and then once Diego left, that combination of things, that's unnerving.
Yeah, Diego, like I said, we've been friends for years before this. We kind of distanced after it, which is sad. And, you know, I wish I could, like, apologize to him because I kind of put him in that position to do this. But we started this next project, which you said we'll get into later, but
yeah,
I asked if he wanted to be a part of it, and he said he was on board at first, but he said no, and he quit. And, you know, I understand, mm-hmm. but he doesn't do the paranormal stuff anymore. After that night, he kind of like quit instantly.
And going back over the footage that you got, there was some EVPs in there. There were orbs in there, and there was times where your battery just suddenly drained and shut off the camera. You really did get a lot of activity.
Yeah, the camera being shut off like multiple times was very confusing because these battery lives have like 5 hours and we have multiple batteries. And the fact that like we enter the King Opera and it dies within 10 minutes of us being in there, we don't know what happened. And then when we did the post show thing and Diego was shooting the alleyway of like where the aisle section of where the seats are, his camera shuts off again. And the camera I had upstairs shuts off as well at the same time.
I thought that was unusual that at the same time you guys are talking about it in the film.
Yeah, I wanted to leave that in because me and him were both kind of like, what just happened? Like, why did both of our cameras just shut off, you know?
And I was looking at, I think it's your website. You've won some awards for this. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we won, I think it's 4 awards now.
That has to feel so good, your first project, especially since you had to kind of pivot and go a whole different direction than you intentionally wanted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For this be my like first ever like feature film and documentary, we've had a lot of people say it was really good for like it being someone's first feature film. So yeah, we won a few awards. We were showcased at a lot of festivals. Even though we didn't win, we were shown at a lot of festivals. Like the POV Film Festival and Hot Springs, Arkansas, they had me go down and they showed the film and they had like this big audience and we did like a little interview segment. It was really cool and the film festivals really enjoyed them.
How did you end up getting it on the Amazon platform? Is that a hard thing to do?
It kind of is because so they have this like little independent program where you can submit the film. And if they like it, they'll put it on their site. They used to not be as picky, but now they're like really picky. So I was kind of surprised that they're like, yeah, we like your project. We'll put it on our site.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. And then there's also like Film Hub, which is a distributing site. And they put it on like Tubi and Amazon. But when I went through them, Amazon did not want it. But when I went as, you know, Spiderweb Productions, my production company, they loved it. So
that's interesting, isn't it? It's the same film.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Gavin Webb about his film, The King Opera House, a paranormal documentary. You can watch it on Amazon or on Tubi. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can also sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.